Welcome to Nell and Matt's Obsolete Movies, the podcast where we revisit movies from our 20-plus years of collecting films in obsolete formats. Or if you want to consider it the other way, a.k.a. films from the VHS era, though not necessarily on VHS. Though we're on a bit of a VHS streak.
This is true.
Yeah, we're going to have to mix it up maybe next time. Our film for this episode is Valentine from 2001. This is a very rare 21st century movie.
On VHS.
On VHS for the podcast. Again, I think, things kind of petered out after 2004. So this might be for a while one of the newer movies we'll ever do on this podcast. And we got it from, I don't remember. We've had it for a very long time. This is my first time seeing it.
Yeah.
But it has lived in the collection, and I don't remember where or how or why we bought this movie.
I know exactly why we bought it.
Why did we buy this movie?
I was very much into Buffy and Angel, and Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Angel, and David Boreanaz stars in the film, and so I'm positive I bought it for that exact reason, because he was in the movie. But we were debating if it was Ides or if it was a couple other places in the area that had VHS tapes. But
yeah, this is definitely not an old rental copy. This was a, we're going to watch this one at home in our collection. Let's buy it now kind of movie. And that's what we did.
But I feel like, you know, like a lot of Gen Xers in the 90s were really into Buffy and Angel. And so I'm sure there was other people out there.
Weren't those movie shows after the 90s, though?
But I'm sure most people like me were like, had a slight interest if you were really into Angel to see what he was doing.
Okay, I get it. All right. I guess, you know, so we were prompted to revisit this movie because it was what culture's underrated slasher films.
Yes.
Which we'll talk about that in a moment. But I guess we should do a plot summary because this is kind of our forgotten movie, I should say, in the grand scheme of things. So it's a slasher. It is a sort of lock, stock, and barrel slasher movie. Based on, you know, you have this opening, this kind of preface where you have this like prom or sixth grade dance. Middle school dance, Carrie shout out, nerd kid beat down.
Yes.
Thing that happens. And then we jump into.
And he was falsely accused of attacking a girl.
Yes, which was why the nerd beat down happened.
Yes.
And then we're jumped to the year 2000, 2001, and then, you know, this group of friends who knew each other since the middle school and the middle school dance start getting murdered. And
getting weird Valentine's Day cards.
And getting weird Valentine's Day cards. And then there's a Valentine's Day party, and there's a bunch of people there, and yet the killer is there, and a bunch of more people get killed, and no one notices the killer until a bunch of people got killed, and then the power goes out, and then the friends are the only ones left in the big spooky house without power with the killer in it, and we have a resolution that kind of doesn't make sense, and I don't know if I want to spoil it, but it literally doesn't make sense, and then the movie's over.
And there's, as you said, a couple red herrings. But I kind of, I've seen the movie before. I knew who the killer was the first time I saw it. So if you kind of pay attention to the hints that are given, you kind of know who the killer is on pretty quick.
Yes. But there's a big part of the woo at the end that does not make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's the plot. It's a slasher movie with some friends. Okay. And a dance that happened in sixth grade and a traumatic thing and slasher movie.
Yeah.
So I don't think we need to explain anything more. If you haven't seen the movie, you've actually seen the movie. If you've seen another slasher movie, if you've seen...
Well, I think it's... So the Scream was 96. The director still did... director did Urban Legend, which was like another popular slasher film at that time.
Yeah.
So... So it kind of was in this vein of these like hipper, cooler slasher films.
It tried.
Films.
There's a lot of industrial music, you know,
there
Static
is.
X,
Marilyn Manson,
Orgy.
Yep, there's a lot.
A Rob Zombie remix.
Yep, yep. So that it does try to have a hip and cool vibe, and of course, like the wardrobe for the girls is like hip and cool. So it does try to be this very trendy slasher.
It's got computers in it.
It does. For that time, it has computers in it, which is
and
pretty,
cell phones.
Which is pretty.
Flip phones. Nokia
yep.
bricks. Sorry. I mean, you know what I mean? But again, like these things were inserted, much like the industrial soundtrack, the predominantly industrial soundtrack.
Yeah.
Things that were inserted as a claim to modernity, a claim to maybe cosmopolitanism.
Yeah.
That is now kind of funny when you look back. Also, the fact that this movie has a very weak plot.
Yeah.
The action does not rise very well with sort of the killer marching on. I mean, you know, if Under Siege is like Die Hard on a boat, this movie is like Friday the 13th Part 1 at a rich person house party in San Francisco with sort of unlikable and interesting characters.
Well, I mean, I think a lot of the... so it only has like a 12% on Rotten Tomatoes. I had to look
yes.
that up really quick. So it's not a very well-liked film. And of course, you know, Scream was so huge. And Scream is very meta, right? Like it's...
Yeah, and I think that's part... Isn't that part of the problem?
Yeah.
Is that you have this movie that was very meta and very self-aware,
yeah.
self-conscious. And it was like, hey, it's the same old stupid presence, but... A premise, but we know it, you know it, let's have some fun, wink,
right.
wink.
Yeah.
And this movie just plays it straight.
Yeah.
And takes itself kind of seriously.
Yeah, I think, well, that, you know, I also am thinking about, like, you also had Jawbreaker at the time, which actually I would argue is probably the more underrated film around that time.
Jawbreaker is great.
About that time period. Where Jawbreaker is very like hip and cool, but it is very like self-aware as mm-hmm. as well. And so I think of any film that kind of fell in the shadow of Scream, Jawbreaker for me would be the one that I would say is the one you should revisit.
Yeah,
as opposed to Valentine. You know, and
even if it is Valentine's Day.
Well, you know, partially also we saw the list. We're a few days out from Valentine's Day. That's why I was like, I think we have it in the basement. We should watch it, which we did have in the basement.
And in alphabetical order.
And in alphabetical order.
So it was easy to find.
But this would have been like the height. So like Buffy and Angel would have started in 99. And Buffy would have been towards the tail end. Buffy, which wrapped up in like 2003. So this is like right kind of the peak of David Boreanaz's kind of fame at that time. He's had like a solid TV career. Like he did a show called Bones and things like that. He's always been like a TV guy, has been where his career, you know, bread and butter is. This would have been the height of his failed movie career as well, because he has never found a movie. He actually did one of the really bad Crow films as well. Never found his way in film. And I just think he's not like a lead.
No, he can't carry a film.
He can't carry a film.
His character is trying to have depth, and then
yeah.
it doesn't.
And it's all yeah. actually, like, all the other, actually most of the people in the film ended up having better careers on TV than they did in film, which is kind of interesting. And then Jessica Capshaw, who plays Dorothy, is Steven Spielberg's stepdaughter, so she probably doesn't even have to worry about having a career.
No.
But yeah, everybody else, like, you know, Katherine Heigl is probably the most famous of the crew. Maybe Denise Richards.
Mm.
Those two are probably the most famous ones who kind of had a career and kind of still remember their names. But it's a lot of, like, cute B actors who weren't really able to carry a film.
Yes.
Yeah.
And weren't perhaps in the script given a lot to work with.
This is true. This is absolutely true.
A lot of the characters in this film kind of just have that They're different plays on the yuppie stereotype, mm-hmm. I think, in a way, or the young person stereotype. It was like, also, they'd watch Singles, and was like, well, what if we had a movie, and then part of the subplot is that these people are looking for love, and all of the funny scrapes young people get into, and they're, you know, looking for love.
And it's Valentine's Day, so it's important to have love at that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so the beginning of the film, you have, you know, Jeremy Melton, the nerd kid, asking all the cute popular girls to dance. Everyone rejects him except for Kate, is the only one. She says, I'll dance with you later. And Dorothy ends up accusing him wrongly of attacking her. So it is kind of interesting. So you can read it two ways. So flash forward to their adult life, 13 years later, Kate's in a relationship with David Boreanaz, but his character is an alcoholic. All the other girls, the other friends are all struggling to find relationships, and they keep ending up with creepers. So you can read it like two ways of it. Very justified that they're shallow people, and they were shallow to him and rude to him, and now they're paying the price for being shallow people and they can't find love. But I also think there is that, for me, I read it more as that like Singles type of thing where it's just like, oh, you know, your 20s don't work out the way you think they're going to be. And if you're a big shot in middle school, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be a big shot in life, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I think I even read it a different way, thinking about it in terms of its context and its time. Yeah, is it Singles meets Columbine?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because there is this, I mean, the whole mythology that is still, you know, with us about the Columbine Massacre, and it was because they were bullied, which has been refuted several times.
Yeah.
In fact, I remember one time, I was like on the 20th anniversary of it, so a friend of ours had posted on Facebook a story about, like, it wasn't that they were bullied, and somebody commented, yeah, those kids were bullied, and they're like, did you read the article?
Yeah.
You know, it was, there was this then, like, yeah, pathological trauma. You were bullied, and you never get over it, and then eventually you just, you go become a kill crazy maniac.
Right.
So I think it's also interesting for me that this movie is in the shadow of that.
Yeah.
And that trope is really important.
Well,
I think, for the film.
Well, that trope is really important for slashers, right?
It's important for slashers.
Yeah.
But this one in particular, and also there is a shout out to Carrie.
Yeah.
There is, that's, again, that's a clever thing. Like, oh, that was clever. Like, the most clever thing to happen in this film happens in the first minute. Maybe it's the second minute. And then you got still have another hour and 41 or so to go.
Yeah.
But the second minute, something clever happens and fun. It's like, I watched movies too. And you can have that little insider handshake. And that's it.
The other thing for a slasher, like, there is actually a big delay between kills as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I like the kill with the bow and arrow. I thought the bow and arrow, that was a good kill. But the kills, like, so they're kind of few and far between. And they're also not, like,
that was only the second kill, wasn't it?
Yeah. So it actually takes a long time. So you kind of have a first kill the very beginning of the film. Kind of get a one close afterwards. But then there's, like, a big break between kills. And there's not actually even, like, really good building of tension.
Yes.
So there's the cards that they kind of get. But, you know, Kate kind of has a couple weird things happen to her. But beyond that, the other ones don't really have anything weird happen to them. So there isn't necessarily, like, a building tension that happens around the other future victims.
Yeah, you're right, because the first kill is in the second scene of the film.
Right.
And is quickly forgotten.
Yeah.
Like, it brings it establishes all these friends have to come together. And there's an implausible cheesiness to that kill.
Yeah.
And then the second kill that you're talking about, the bow and arrow kill, because, okay, I'm spoiling this one part, but the bow and arrow kill ends up falling into the most conveniently placed dumpster in ever. Human history. Yeah. And in a large apartment building where you would never keep a dumpster.
Yeah.
So we don't actually find out about that kill until much later.
Right.
And so, yeah, it almost reminds me of you saying about, like, these people, you know, having more successful TV careers.
Yeah.
It reminds me of something actually Joel Siegel once said about a Tony Danza movie.
Mm-hmm.
That there's a difference between making 4 episodes of a sitcom or 4 episodes of an episodic drama TV show versus making a film.
Right.
And in some ways, I think, yeah, this weirdness of the pacing of the film, the lack of any rising tension.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's maybe stalking these people, maybe not.
Yeah.
But then there's going to be this party, but doesn't establish the killer is headed to the party necessarily. It is like multiple episodes of a TV series.
Yeah, and I think, like, maybe that's why. Now, it actually did make a profit, shockingly. I think it cost around $10 million to make, and it made $30. So it did make a little bit of a profit. But I do think that maybe is part of it. Like, there really is not this rising tension. And the trope of, like, sending out the Valentine's Day card that has the, like, horrible message, like, that could have been, you know, like I'll like you better with your next, like, slit or whatever that one was. Like, that could have kept happening. Like, they could have gotten...
You're right. I mean, the Postal Service is very convenient in terms of having access to sending things to people.
And even, like...
this killer just doesn't.
And, like, the, you know, even, like, the one, he sends a, chocolates that have maggots in it to the one girl. Like, stuff like that could have kept happening, or there could have been, like, more shadows.
Which they also forget about.
Yeah.
They're just, like, thing, and next scene, she's drinking orange juice out of the container.
Yeah, and it's, like, no big deal.
You've had maggots in your mouth and your roommates, and that's, like, and, like, shared orange juice, which
your
is
friend,
really gross.
And your friend was just killed, so wouldn't you mention to the police I got a threatening Valentine's Day card?
Yeah.
And I got chocolate with maggots in it. You know, so, like, that kind of stuff is kind of weird. So, for me, like, you don't get the sense of the hunter stalking its prey.
Yes, which you need in a slasher.
Which you need in a slasher. And, like, I like the mask. Like, I like the look of the slasher. Like, of the killer. Like, I actually
yes,
do
and
like
the towel that the weird nerdy kid's got a nosebleed. And then the...
You keep seeing the nosebleed out of the mask.
Yeah, which is nice.
Which is nice. But there isn't any other building tension
that
has with it. And, like, the guys that they meet... And you're thinking, like, you're trying to get through all the different suspects. They all kind of have these scummy guys. But none of them come off as, like, potentially dangerous.
Yeah.
Either. Yeah. Which is kind of...
You could have had better red herrings.
You could have had a lot better red herrings that happened, you know. Which I think is why everyone likes Scream, right? Because they do that building tension really well through the use of, like, phone calls and, you know, and, like, just peaks of things and all this other stuff. Like, they do that so much better than this film did.
Yes.
And because it's in the it's 2001, you should know better around how to do the pacing of a slasher, right?
Yes.
So if you're going to play with the form of a slasher, you should do it better. but they kind of actually did it worse than a typical slasher.
Yes, they did. And, you know, other things, I mean, the first kill, she's wearing a tank top and performing a dissection.
Yeah.
She's a med student. And that, for me, is triggering.
You right out of the film.
Yeah, it did, because maybe I work at a university where one of my esteemed colleagues actually works in the cadaver lab, though she's an English professor. She does work with the students in the cadaver lab, and you just can't dress like that in cadaver lab.
Yeah.
Anyway, but again, it's everything's a reset button, just like it would be on a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, your friend got murdered that you've known your entire life.
Yeah.
And you have all your friends together and you're bonding over that grief, or not, or you just go back to dating because whatever. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they spend more time on Kate and her boyfriend, and they're kind of, are they going to get back together or not get back together tension? that you would have in a romantic comedy. They spend yeah. much more time on that.
The only other thing I have to talk about with this movie, other than like industrial music not surviving very well, one of the more remarkable things about this VHS tape is that the trailers for all of these really forgettable, unremarkable films
yeah.
were bookended by an ad for this new way to watch movies called DVD. It's a movie on a disc the size of a CD. And then the end, ad for AOL touting this thing called AOL Instant Messenger.
America Online. They actually called it America Online.
America Online. We should probably explain AOL. What that means. Yeah. And that the Instant Messenger, AOL Instant Messenger,
yeah.
was this cool new thing you can do, which is also wonderfully, you know, retro futuristic and whatever, and dated and fun and...
Yeah, it's yeah. very rare that you actually put on something and you're like, wow, technology is drastically changing from this moment on, right? And then,
yes.
And then also, people don't use DVDs anymore. Like, forget about VHS.
Yeah, people I mean, stream. Hopefully we can still buy DVDs. Yeah. Hopefully DVDs do not become part of this podcast.
Yeah.
Because there's still, not that I don't trust streaming, it's just... I want to always have it available. Not that it, you know, it's going to disappear. It's going to change yeah. services. I got to subscribe to something else. I just like owning the damn thing.
And you so like the hopefully DVD, media.
Yes, the physical media, yeah. and that you can stop paying for it once you bought it.
Yeah.
And that I can use DVDs as a teaching tool and not worry about if I can stream it or not in a classroom. So hopefully DVDs will never be featured yeah. on this podcast.
Well, hopefully. But I think it's like touting the next big thing that's no longer the next big thing, right?
Yes.
DVDs are no longer the next big thing. AOL is certainly on no one's radar.
And Instant Messenger got turned off?
It got turned off, yeah.
Yeah, permanently, forever.
And like, how much was Instant Messenger a part of everyone's life at that time?
Yeah.
And Google didn't exist at the time.
Yeah.
Right? Facebook didn't exist at the time.
Not even MySpace.
So these kind of slight... Angel Fire would have still been out, and Netscape.
Tripod, GeoCities. Well, so Angel Fire sites are still up. Tripod sites are still up. GeoCities gone.
Gone. Wow. Ask Jeeves would have been like the search engine. Yeah. So it's... It's really weird because it was like, whoa, things are changing. AOL Instant Messenger, no way.
And you think even
DVDs,
with...
DVDs, holy shit, you know.
Yeah, I mean, even with the trailers, it's amazing. Like, this is nostalgic, this is time travel, but it's also profoundly unremarkable time travel. Like, you go and you time travel and have a really boring experience in yeah. the past. That's what it is. And so, do you want to move on to the four big questions? Because I don't know if I have anything else to say about this movie. Question one, is it camp, retro, classic, or just an old movie?
It's just an old movie. I don't think there's fun enough elements to call it campy.
Yes, and so what culture thinking when they made this an underrated slasher? This is a perfectly slotted, forgotten slasher.
Yeah.
And the thing is about slashers, too... There's no reason to revisit an unremarkable slasher.
Right.
Because people keep making them. You could just have that experience again, and at least there'll be a twinge of newness to it.
Yeah. They have to fill content. I do, you know, like, we have this conversation about Green Day, and I think if you were a certain age, like, when we were too old for Green Day, right?
Yes.
Like, it just did not connect with us because we were into punk bands that predated Green Day, that were influenced
yeah,
by
you know,
Green
it's
Day.
It's that when so, you come of age, you need that.
I think if you were 12, 13-year-old watching that movie, you probably have
Valentine.
On VHS in
2002.
You probably have a special place in your heart for
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and there's this weird thing back there called Halloween.
Yeah.
With the lady from that sitcom in it.
Yeah.
You know, it was cool, I guess. Yeah, yeah.
The other thing is, I mean, I think I also, like, I'm a very particular horror fan. And I shouldn't say, most horror fans are very particular horror fans, but I do, yeah, I think sometimes that desire for content, you're like, oh, Valentine, I remember that as a kid. It kind of freaked me out. My friends and I watched it when we were like 12 in my parents' backyard, in my parents', den. It scared me. Let me put that on that list. I think that kind of happens to people sometimes.
Happens, yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Question two, what about the social political distance? Bechdel test, the way it portrays race, though it's mostly just a white film, I think.
It is definitely a white
film.
Very,
very white film.
I think actually the only diversity is the maid. Ouch. That's literally the only diversity. Oh, I'm sorry, they do speed dating.
Oh, yes, there's one African-American gentleman in speed dating.
We also forgot to, yeah, so there's speed dating in it, and
there's
video
speed dating,
dating. So I'm gonna say this. So the girls do talk about men, but they also kind of talk about other things, right? So the girl friendship is a big part of the film. The other thing is, I also have to say, is Paige especially kind of confronts sexism really well. I think in the sense of, the guy, the police officer putting his hand on her thigh, and she's just like, don't touch me. The guy who is wants her to wax him off, and she literally waxes him off in a certain way. I think that was really interesting that, the other girl, Lily, the Max wanted to have a threesome. She wasn't interested in it. I think there was this almost, even though we're women, we don't have to pleasure men.
Yes.
And so that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Right? That part of it was a little bit interesting. And even with Kate trying to figure out, should she stay with her boyfriend who's struggling with alcoholism. I think that was all very interesting, and I would have loved actually if there was more of that. I think that would have been fascinating to focus more on. What does it mean to be a woman? What does it mean to be a single woman? And kind of, even her Kate's creepy roommate or creepy neighbor, and having to deal with her creepy neighbor. I wish there was more of that, because there was these little glimpses of.
Yes.
This kind of girl power, as they would say in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
These little glimpses that would have been more interesting to see. I would actually even have taken it further, because are they such bad people because they didn't want to dance with Jeremy? There is a little bit of an incel kind of vibe to that. Are they such,
this is true,
are they such bad people because they said no to Jeremy? How many, middle school, we were all kind of jerks in middle school, I'm sure. I mean, I was still the fat girl. I was the fat girl in middle school. I had definitely had my feelings hurt. But should you have to dance with somebody you don't want to dance with?
Yeah, there is, you're right. That is an incel thing.
And is it wrong that they said no to him? Right.
I mean, maybe is it that they said they could have been nicer in saying no.
Yeah, they could have been nice, but still at the core of it.
The good old Jeremy Milton was not owed a dance or anything else.
So I wonder, that actually would have been interesting to explore, because this is a big part of slashers, is the person who's wronged in some way. And, for the dance, being rejected, the dance, did that warrant deaths, right? Now, being falsely accused, I get wanting revenge after being falsely accused, but a girl saying no to a dance, does she deserve? Yeah.
Yeah, so we talked about this a little bit in terms of the technical distance, the room test. I mean, the big thing is there would have been an app.
Well,
there'd be an app.
Well, I mean,
they look at an app.
So there's some funny things. There's speed dating. There's video dating. She requests a video of a guy. There's video dating. The cell phones are huge. That is definitely. Oh, they use. I mean, we can't. I mean, they did aging.
Age progression on a photograph on a computer.
I mean, that was pretty
fancy. That was pretty high tech.
And they answer
in the cleanest police station
in the world.
In the world.
And then she, of course, you know, is Kate is doing a search of Jeremy Milton on a search engine. And all it was missing was the dancing hamster and dancing Jesus.
And the flying toaster.
And it would have been perfect.
Yes. Which leads us to the big final question. Will we ever watch it again?
No.
Unless we forget.
We'll probably forget. Well, so I'd be remiss if I didn't say this. So David Boreanaz' father is Dave Thomas or Dave Roberts of Philadelphia, and so he was the weatherman in Philadelphia for years as a
Channel 6 Action News and had the clouds that summed everything up.
So Dave Roberts, when he was in Philadelphia, I believe he was Dave Thomas when he was in Buffalo. But Dave Roberts in Philadelphia was this very beloved weatherman who was a big part of life growing up. So there is like this slight little nostalgia. And also because I was a fan of Buffy and Angel. There's that
as were a lot of people.
Slight little nostalgia with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So will it probably live on our basement for a long time? Absolutely.
Yeah.
We'll probably be... It's probably been over a decade since we've watched this. I mean, we probably watched this 20 years ago when I first purchased the VHS.
Yeah.
We probably have not watched it since 2002. And we'll probably not watch it again for another 20 years.
Or until we forget that the movie is utterly unremarkable.
Yeah.
And just not good and kind of boring.
Absolutely.
For a slasher to be kind of boring in places.
Yeah. There wasn't actually even fun nostalgia moments. Sometimes we'll go to like a 90s movie just for nostalgia moments. And so this is, of course, 2001.
Which is the odd duck because that was the year of the 90s and basically everything in the world and our entire idea of America ended. So it's, you know.
But there wasn't for me these fun little nostalgia moments either.
Yeah.
That came through.
Yeah. So...
Don't watch it.
Watch another slasher.
Check out Jawbreaker. Check out Scream.
Yeah.
Check out other things. This one isn't worth it.
And definitely don't watch it twice.
I think that's it.
Bye.
Bye.